José Miguel Battle Sr. sat with his men. They were spread out around the hull of a boat, some staring out to sea and others looking up at the night sky. There were few clouds to obscure the deep blue canvas above, which revealed a dazzling amalgam of celestial asterisms and constellations, the Big and Little Dippers, Corona Borealis, Orion, the Milky Way. The moon provided the only light. It glistened off the surface of the ocean, illuminating a path that led due north. Aboard Battle's vessel were nearly 200 men with rifles. They hardly spoke. Quietly pondering the nature of the cosmos seemed an appropriate state of being for the undertaking at hand. Battle knew the drill. He and the other soldiers had been training for this mission for months. Now, sailing under a canopy of stars and planets, they consigned their fate to the gods. They were on their way to Cuba to reclaim La Patria, which they felt had been unjustly seized from them by a silver-tongued despot with a scraggly beard and a prodigious cigar. Battle's boat was one of six vessels, each filled with hundreds of men who comprised an invading army known as the 2506 Brigade. The ships had set sail from Puerto Cabeza on the coast of Nicaragua at 2 a.m. the previous day. The various boats traversed the Caribbean Sea through slightly different routes so they would not be easily detected. They sailed through the dark, watched the sunrise, continued throughout the following day, saw the sunset, and then all boats converged under cover of darkness 40 miles off the coast of Cuba. At 31, Battle was older than many of the men in the brigade, a motley army of soldiers who ranged in age from 16 to 61. Though José Miguel was stout, bordering on overweight, he was a born leader. His reputation as a tough vice cop in Havana preceded him, and while training for the invasion, he had distinguished himself enough to be given the rank of second lieutenant and designated the leader of a platoon. His unit would be among the first to go ashore once the flotilla reached Cuba. The date was April 16, 1961. The brigade was scheduled to land at an area of the island known as the Bay of Pigs, Bahía de Cochinos, on the southern coast in the province of Matanzas. The landing site had been changed at the last minute. In fact, though the men had trained hard and were more than ready to fight, the battle plan for the invasion had been sucked into a political vortex of compromise and indecision. Plans for the attack had begun years earlier under the administration of President Dwight D. Eisenhower. It was a covert operation of the Central Intelligence Agency. In 1961, upon assuming office as the newly elected president, John F. Kennedy inherited the plan. It was controversial, to say the least. The U.S. government could not be seen as sanctioning the invasion in any way. As an undeclared act of war, it would be in violation of international law. Within the Oval Office of the White House, Kennedy voiced doubts about the plan, but he had boxed himself into a corner. During the 1960 presidential campaign, Kennedy had taunted his opponent, Vice President Richard M. Nixon. He declared that the Eisenhower administration, in allowing Fidel Castro to gain a toehold in Cuba, was soft on communism. Now Kennedy could not squelch the invasion without appearing hypocritical and cowardly. Instead, what he did was systematically chip away at aspects of the plan, all in the interest of minimizing the appearance of U.S. military involvement in the operation. There were many questionable decisions along the way, including the order to call off pre-invasion bombings of Castro's Air Force. The original plan had been to take out Cuba's warplanes before the brigade landed, but after only one bombing raid, in which only a small number of planes were disabled, President Kennedy, fearing that the United States would be implicated, ordered a halt. The men of the 2506 Brigade had no idea that President Kennedy was in the midst of a Hamlet-like internal struggle over the invasion's propriety and prospects for success. What mattered most to these men was their own morale, which was high. Many had left behind wives, children, and decent lives when they volunteered for the mission, and they did so with single-minded dedication. The overriding motive was vengeance, the desire to get revenge against Castro and reclaim Cuba. How could they lose? They had been trained and were being guided by officers of the U.S. military, the most powerful fighting force on the planet. Many upon joining the brigade had never heard of the Central Intelligence Agency, but that hardly mattered. Their desire for victory and their blind faith were an emotional balm, a sedative that inoculated them from the reality that as they sailed the Caribbean Sea toward their homeland, their mission was shifting below them. On board the command ship Blagger, Lieutenant Battle's boat, some of the men played cards to bide their time. Battle loved to gamble, and poker was his game. He played cards with members of his platoon. None of these men had been told that the plan to wipe out Castro's Air Force had been scrapped. It was supposed to be a surprise attack. These men were expecting to meet little or no resistance. They had no idea that the invasion had been compromised before they landed. They were sailing toward their doom.